Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the Matrix shit. Let's go hook him up!
Having a pretty awesome fucking Friday. But I also see we're joined by our other co-host, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Oh, not much. I almost forgot to call it in, which won't be the first thing that I forget tonight.
I'm sure it won't be. And you missed the thing by like seconds. I was actually getting kind of worried there for you, Craig.
Oh, maybe you can hold the show together.
Yeah. Usually Katrina is the one that calls, you know, on the outskirts of being late for the intro, but it stayed with you. But anyway, we're a week away from Thanksgiving, and
we're a week shy of Thanksgiving. We already had Thanksgiving.
Okay. What the fuck did I say?
We're removed from Thanksgiving.
Oh.
Yes, removed.
What? Okay. Yeah, we just passed Thanksgiving like just over a week ago. So
yeah,
we actually had a show, but we were minus two co-hosts, so why don't you tell us about your Thanksgiving first, Couture, because I'm sure that'll be the shorter one.
We had Thanksgiving dinner. It was fun. I went to the movies and saw the Muppets.
Oh, dope. Me too.
Yeah, I'm going to go see him either Monday or Tuesday.
But never again will I take a child to the movies.
Why? They pissed
right.
you off?
Because it's the movies. I don't like going to the movies. There's too many people there.
There's
too many kids.
Well, you should have gone with Granny. There was only four people in her theater.
Yeah, it's the best time to go to the movies is on a school day at around like 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
And
right.
You'll get the majority of movie theater to yourself. That's the best time to go. Because I really hate going to a crowded theater. I don't like it at all.
Especially on a weekend or Friday or Saturday or something.
Mm.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid, go see something on opening weekend. God.
Right. I'm sure you probably like the movie better than the kids did.
I liked it better. I don't think they know the Muppets too well.
So. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited, so we'll go ahead and We'll skip the subject because I don't want you guys to spoil the Muppets for me.
Well, we wouldn't do that anyway.
Yeah,
can
and
you spoil
I know
Muppets for somebody? I don't know.
The what?
Nothing.
Oh. Well, I was going to say, I know Katrina didn't do anything for Black Friday other than stay at home. And I know I sure as hell didn't do anything for Black Friday. I will say that Black Friday was actually, I guess, they started earlier this year or something.
Oh, yeah.
It's usually like I'm doing my paper route like at about, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock. and I have to pass a Walmart at between two of my routes, and every year this sucker is just packed all the way, every spot, with cars circling and circling and circling and just waiting for someone who's going to move in an hour or two. And, I mean, it's pretty bad, but when I drove by, it was busy, but it wasn't that the mob scene that it's been in the past. So I'm guessing instead of opening at like 5 or 6 or whatever in the morning, that the stores just open at midnight.
Yeah. And I actually rolled by the Walmart around 10 p.m. on Thursday, and it was packed. My Thanksgiving started off with dinner at the in-laws on Thursday, and wrapped up there at about 5 o'clock after watching a couple of football games and rolling out of there. And, of course, we'd gotten a newspaper to check all the – because I am a Black Friday – shopper. I love getting it in and amongst the people, the unwashed masses, as it were. And so we drove by the Walmart, and it was pretty packed. And they had their thing is they take pallets of merchandise and they put it down the center of the aisles, and then at 12 o'clock or whatever, they'll come over with a blade of some kind and break open the plastic, and then it's pretty much mayhem after that. So at right around, it's probably 6 o'clock in the evening, there are already people like camped out around these pallets of merchandise in our local Walmart. So we decided we would not be returning to the Walmart as per last year's debacle of waiting in line for almost 2 hours to check out. So,
pepper spray involved in this trip? I've seen things like were pepper spray involved.
No, there was no pepper spray involved in this trip. Last year, I did witness a couple of young ladies. I think it was a scooter, and it was the last one in the bunch, and they were playing tug of war with it. You know, one of the little Razor scooters, and
yeah.
There was a large Black woman mounted one of the piles of merchandise and was throwing it to her family. It was very, very comical. I saw a couple of guys get in a fist fight over a place in line, and my wife and I swore off Walmart on Black Friday from now on. So as they were dragging the guy away, I made sure to pipe up very loud, "God bless us, everyone."
Man, I saw someone posted a video from a Walmart at doing exactly what you said with these crates, where they basically opened it up, and basically
yeah.
It was $2 waffle makers.
Yep.
And you would think that these boxes were filled with diamonds and gold and shit like that because these people wanted to kill people for a $2 waffle maker.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think I've done a special episode of Cops dealing with Black Friday. I bet that'd be a ratings hit.
That's not a
bad when they go to Mardi Gras and everybody's drunk. They got to arrest them.
Yeah. Yeah, so Black Friday started at 5 a.m. for myself. Got up and made the 45-minute journey out to Seattle. Not only was it... Black Friday was also Record Store Day, which is the one or two days of the year when independent record stores will get all these limited releases. So that was first on my agenda to get a couple of Nirvana and Soundgarden, and Chili Peppers, and some other bands. Pete Townsend put out a 10-inch single of the Quadrophenia demos. So that was really cool. I had to have that.
Do you get these on DVD or vinyl?
Vinyl. Yeah, I still collect records. Shoot me.
And you actually have a working vinyl player?
Yeah.
Really? I actually got it inherited. I don't even actually know how old it is, but I got one of those ones that has like a built-in fireplace, and it's all one of the parts in there, and unfortunately, it sounds like utter crap. But
some audio files.
Go ahead.
Some audio files will tell you that the sound of a record player is actually better than the sound of a CD player. I must not have that good of a record player, but I just like holding the large, oversized vinyl. You know, I just think it's cool. And not to mention, I'm on the cover of Chris Cornell's new album, so I had to get that, you know, because you can see my face and stuff on there.
Ooh.
Chris Cornell?
Never heard of
Chris Cornell. He's a lead singer for Soundgarden.
I've heard of them. Say, I've heard of, you should have said nobody from Soundgarden now to pick up on it.
Yeah. Well, Chris Cornell
has
a
Pearl Jam movie. Is it any good? I know it's on Netflix.
It's amazing, but you've got a biased opinion. I ain't gonna lie. Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, you check it out.
Like a concert.
No. It's a documentary. It's about a 2.5-hour. Documentary from day one. It's really good stuff.
I probably won't watch it.
Okay, fine. Well, anybody else, check it out. It's great. So anyway, when I was at the Chris Cornell show, I think it was around April or March, and might have been May. I'm not 100%. But there was a show in Seattle at the Moore Theater, and myself and a buddy of mine went, and they took a photographer was taking pictures of the show, and one of the pictures they took is of Chris reaching over after one of his songs and shaking hands with the crowd. Well, somebody snapped a picture just as that was getting over, and that's the cover of his new album. And if you look, I mean, you can tell it's me, but I'm standing there in the crowd of this crowd shot that Chris Cornell's in, so I'm actually on the cover of Chris Cornell's new album. So it's pretty cool.
That sounds like whoever approved this needs to be fired, like the person who approved the Sin Cara shirt. Why would you want such an unattractive man on the cover of your album?
There's a stunningly handsome man on the cover of the album, and we just don't know who it is.
He didn't have a running talk like on a Sin Cara shirt, did he?
That's for sure. Oh, goodness. Anyway,
that person should have gotten fired.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Here's your release. Here's your pink slip, and here's your drawing of a pee-pee.
Somebody on the board said that now he's even botching his own T-shirts. So.
So anyway, after the record store day, it was funny because the guy that owned the joint came out and started to, you know, hey, we don't want any violence like we had in New York this morning. We were like, huh? Because we'd been standing in line. So anyway, got in there, got my records, come back to the mall area, hit a couple of places, and went over to my folks. Had Thanksgiving part two, and that was awesome, at my folks' house. And then my whole family, I'm talking myself and my wife and my son, my mom and dad, my brother and his wife and their little one, we all went out and watched the Muppets as a family. And it was the most amazing trip the Probers have had in a while. So
now,
it was a cool Thanksgiving.
For Black Friday, obviously I've never been out on Black Friday, so I don't know prices of things. But how much money can you usually save? I mean, you know, tell us some of the things you get good deals on.
Well, not only did we drive by Walmart on Thursday, Thanksgiving, we also drove by Best Buy. And there was probably 30 to 40 people in line at 5 o'clock in the evening. And this place opened up at midnight.
There's a higher cast of white people at the Best Buy than at the Walmart.
Those are unwashed masses at the Walmart.
Right. Right. And I love Walmart because they have good deals. But Best Buy was, you know, they had like 10 TVs. It's a 42-inch RCA TV, $199.
Hmm.
That's an amazing deal. But the store only had like 10 of them.
Yeah, you
but
gotta
they also
camp
have,
out and do all that shit to get that.
Yeah.
To get those.
There was a guy, the first guy in line, there was a tent set up, and he had a generator. And he'd been there for a while. But anyway, so yeah, there's all kinds of deals. Like Ed was saying, the $2 waffle iron that two women fought over in, you know, back east. And some of the deals we saw, there was like a place called Fred Meyer's. I think you guys have them over there, called Kroger's. They had socks, half off, you know. So that was their big thing. They do that every year. $4 throw blankets, you know, things like that. And I picked up video games at, you know, 25% off. And
hey, that's
yeah.
The only thing I'd be interested in right there is, like, get some video
yeah.
games or something like that, or DVDs.
I got my brother, he wanted, for God knows why, the new Transformers movie on Blu-ray with a digital copy and all that, you know. I think I paid $14 for it. So yeah, there's deals to be had, but I got off early today. They offered to let some of us go early, and so I bolted on that because I've been putting in tons of overtime lately. And went shopping today, and actually probably did just as good today as we did Black Friday at JCPenney's and whatnot.
I'm satisfied with my shopping on my iPhone with my Amazon app.
I was about to ask. I know, have either of you guys partaken in a new thing, Cyber Monday?
Yes. Yeah, I did some of that on Monday.
You know, I hate that. That was the worst day ever invented, was Cyber Monday, because it's bad enough Black Friday's there, but now Cyber Monday. You have no fucking idea how goddamn busy we were at UPS this week. It was fucking a war zone. We got
yeah.
overtime every day. It was
yeah.
psycho. If I see another one of those goddamn Lightning McQueen fucking little cars for those kids, I would pick one up and throw it and break it over somebody's head. Those things drive me crazy. You know what I'm talking about, right? I'm sure you've talked
oh, yeah.
for your kids. Yeah.
No, no. Cameron's getting nothing but Star Wars stuff this year. That's what he wanted. He wanted Star Wars. And so Dad was like a kid in a candy store, man. We got this, you know, great big TIE fighter with Darth Vader, and then the X-Wing fighter with Luke and R2-D2, you know. It's like this huge package, you know, and it was like $80 at Toys R Us for both of them. And I was like, yeah. So I can't wait to play. I mean, give him his toys on Christmas.
You should get the Star Wars that are like mixed with the Transformers.
That's so dumb. That's like, yeah, they have a Darth Vader Transformer. Looks ghetto.
I think it's old. They got like a Slave One ship that transforms into Boba Fett or something like that. I don't know.
Huh.
Kind of neat.
I haven't seen that one.
I'll tell you about a raw deal right here. In 5 hours and 47 minutes, I can finally play the third level on Angry Birds.
That's
They're releasing the one level each day until Christmas. That's fucked up. You give them all to me on the same day.
I think I'm just going to wait till Christmas to play them all.
Yeah, I could do that, but yeah.
Anyway,
it's the people that did that song, 12 Days of Christmas. Cause they didn't do that song, people wouldn't be counting down the days of Christmas like they do here. So we'd all get them in one day.
Good call. So. Yeah, so I have like two more things to buy, and I'm completely done with my Christmas shopping, so I'm pretty stoked.
They need to buy me a Christmas early. And a birthday present, so don't forget.
Yeah, I'll get you the same thing I got you last year. Yeah.
Box of a layer.
Yeah, remember what that was? Yeah, nothing. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll invite you to my house sometime and you can have breakfast. Oh wait, I already did that too. Anyway.
Yeah, I wasn't good enough to make the guest list, but that went to the black guy.
It's nothing personal. I just don't trust you. Anyway.
We can go ahead and switch over to our topic of the day. I'm over here trying to get to my email Couture sent me because Couture was on the job this week.
Yeah.
Man, I was expecting a big email, but damn, I got everything. Shit.
That email is so big. That email was so big. He actually sent it 2 days ago, and it just came.
I didn't know. I didn't think we were going to talk about all these world class ones, but I just put them all up there. You know, and those star cage. You know, when it gets to the late 90s, it's pretty much shit. So you don't have to even fool with some of those.
Yeah. Just for the record, once you guys start talking about world class and their Thanksgiving Day specials, I'm out. I got nothing.
Well, I've seen many of the Thanksgiving or Christmas Day things, the world class, inside from that, you know, like the Kerry Von Erich Ric Flair cage match where the Freebirds turned and all that. Haven't seen too much of it.
Well, we only really need to go like over like maybe the first three or four, you know. Those were the main ones.
Oh, we
got
to the heart attack angle too. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I guess we'll get them out of the way real quick. I mean, we won't spend too much time with them. But the first one is actually the Christmas Day show, and this would have been in 1982, and this would probably go down as one of the most famous angles of all time and famous shows of all time. Because this is where you basically had a territory go from just doing barely okay to becoming the hottest wrestling promotion in the world for a good 2-3 years, maybe. And
yeah, started trail off
you know,
in 1985.
This will be like this angle from the show will be we've seen it a million times since and we'll see it a million times again and it'll never be as good.
Yeah, this was a case of, this was one of those angles that I can't think of too many that, like, pretty much popped the territory overnight.
Yeah. It was starting to pick, like, because, you know, I started to go to the shows before David was even back when he was still in Florida. And that was, like, over the weeks, the crowd would get a little bigger and stuff. And it was kind of, like, picking up. But when this happened, this, like, really, like, really cut the territory, like you say, on fire, just like basically overnight. And you want to go over the card on the first one, for sure?
Okay. Brian Adidas defeated Frank Dusik. It used to be Adidas, but the shoe people got pissed off, so they changed it to Adidas. Go figure. I don't understand that.
He was always pretty good, but apparently a lot of people say that the main reason he got his diamond push was because he was basically the drug dealer in the locker room.
Didn't he go to high school with Kerry and all those guys or something?
Yeah, he's supposed to be like the high school buddy of Kerry Von Erich and stuff.
Now, here's a good question. Why does he have to change his name from Adidas to Adidas, but they can use, like, the name Star Wars for their cards? Call them call them Christmas Star Wars or something like that. How did they get away
with it? Yeah, and it wasn't just Christmas shows. They have like they do it. They do a show. I mean, it was either once a month, every 2 weeks here, and then they every like three or fourth one it'd be the big Star Wars show. I don't know. It's weird.
Okay. Jose Lothario and Al Madrill defeated Checkmate and Magic Dragon.
Hmm. I wrestled
Magic Dragon was awesome. The Magic Dragon was he was like supposed to be Kabuki's protege, but he could do way more stuff than Kabuki could do.
And he's the one that died in Kabuki's spot, right? Or he got killed?
Yeah.
Basically, on a plane or something.
Yeah, basically the story is that this guy would also do an imitation of Kabuki. So every once in a while, Kabuki would let him take a booking here or there. And apparently the guy in the Magic Dragon, I think he got, like, married or whatever. And it was kind of going to be, like, a honeymoon present or something. He was going to get to go work somewhere cool. So he went in Kabuki's place, and the plane crashed, and he got killed. And it really wasn't, like, that big of a story outside of people who watch World Class. I don't think a lot of people know about it, but Yeah, he was pretty awesome. And Checkmate, the thing I remember about Checkmate is he used to do this thing where he would crawl into a ball and you couldn't, like, hurt him when he was in his ball. And I don't think I've ever seen that before.
So he had the name Checkmate. Did he wear, like, a checkerboard pattern or anything like this?
I think it was a thing of, like, the game of human chess is what some people call wrestling, or maybe that has something to do with his name. I don't know.
So his name was Checkmate, and his defensive move was to curl up like an armadillo.
Basically. To me, his mask reminded me of, like, Fishman for some reason.
Was he the mask guy, Checkmate?
He was a mask guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next match is Lone Eagle beat Little Tokyo with special referee Bugsy McGraw, who I call the Fat Jimmy Valiant.
Biggest travesty in the history of the Wrestling Observer Awards is Bugsy McGraw getting worst interview. I don't know what the hell happened that year, but these people weren't looking at the Bugsy McGraw I used to watch.
And the best thing Bugsy McGraw ever did was when he put Bill Mercer down that water slide at that water park in the suit. That was awesome.
That and one of his biggest feuds was against Ray Candy, and Ray Candy was a big 400-pound, 5-foot black guy, and he had like a bodysuit and a mask and called himself Superfly. So Bugsy McGraw would always come to the ring with those giant, like, flat waters that were like 2 feet big for him.
Right.
That was
the joy
funny.
To the world.
Why is it always funny when wrestlers go down a slide?
I don't know. I think the thing about Bill Mercer is he had to do that in like 2 or 3 takes. So he had to go back up and go down the slide so they could catch him, like set the camera up. They probably just had one camera. Set the camera up in this part of the slide. Then,
right.
Okay, go back up. We'll set it up on this part of the slide. So,
well, I just remember... You know, Crash Holly running, you know, when he was the 24/7 hardcore champion and running into the, you know, children's area and sliding down the slide. I vividly remember this.
Whenever somebody in a suit is near water, they got to go in the water. You know, when JJ got thrown into the swimming pool in the Flair Dream date and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay, the next match was Kevin Von Erich beat King Kong Bundy by DQ.
Have any of you guys seen Bundy with the hair? I'm pretty sure his hair was gone by now, but have any of you guys ever seen him with the hair?
I have.
I've seen pictures. But
he had hair when he wrestled Fritz, right, in Fritz's last match?
Yeah, I think that's basically where he lost it.
I remember when they
were
trying to have him
try
on toupees on Tuesday Night Titans once. Did you ever see that clip?
Yeah.
David Von Erich defeated Bill Irwin. Then they had Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy and David Von Erich, who substituted for Buddy Roberts, beat Iron Mike Sharp, Ben Sharp, and Tom Steele to win the 6-man tag team championships. And David relinquished his share to Buddy Roberts when he was able to, you know, when he came in. So, but this is a big part of the story going into the main event, Ed.
Yeah. Yeah,
was there a louder?
Wait, go ahead.
I said, was there ever a louder man in wrestling than Iron Mike Sharp?
Or something?
Yeah, he used to do jobs for WWE back or WWF back in the day. Iron Mike Sharp.
Yeah,
he just wore like a black. He wore like a black, not a singlet, but you know, just black trunks. Black boots, great big dude, but when he would get chopped, he was just as loud as can be. It's like the loudest man ever.
I mean, they used to tell stories. They'd be at the arenas, and he'd take like 8 showers in one day at the arenas.
What?
Because he had like obsessive compulsive disorder or something like that. He's always
Opposite. That's the complete opposite of Brian Alvarez, who never showered after in any matches.
Ew. That's, so he didn't give all the staff protections. There was one time he did take a shower in Oregon, but I'm going to save that story for the Christmas show.
That's funny. But, yeah, this is like the Freebirds came in one at a time. My first Michael Hayes showed up. And I think his first appearance actually was here in San Antonio. And he just got like an interview. And he did mention he was going to bring his brothers in. And then they brought in Terry Gordy. Came in like very shortly after. And then it took a couple of weeks for Buddy. I mean, we knew Buddy was coming, but for some reason it took longer. And they had David take his place. And, you know, it was like they were all happy and celebrating and hugging each other after they won the titles and stuff. I remember that.
And also they did the write-in campaign, the fans to choose the referee for the cage match. And they voted Michael Hayes, so the fans got fucked too.
Yeah, if you watch that tape, there's this one redneck dude. He's about 7 feet tall in the audience, and he was about ready to start swinging on Terry Gordy outside the cage. The dude was so pissed off, and like, you know what I mean? It was real to that dude.
You know, the Von Erichs around today, they'd be like John Cena.
Probably. I mean, yeah, I mean,
you're right.
Face
in this feud, if it was happening today, probably.
Yeah.
Well, basically, this is a match. It was a cage match. It was Ric Flair with Kerry, and it was actually like Michael Hayes was voted in as the referee, but it was actually Michael Hayes and fucking, the hell was his name? How did I forget his name?
David Manning?
David Manning, yeah. Manning was like in the ring, too. And,
look too crowded. Two refs in there.
Yeah. And Michael Hayes would get real, like, physical. It was actually both of them. He would pull both of them off of each other and stuff. And him and Manny would always start arguing and stuff. And Flair had either, what happened? He either, like, punched Hayes or accidentally, like, ran into Hayes or, you know, there was a collision between them.
He was just kind of pushing him around. And then he turned Michael Hayes just hauled off and dick Ric Flair and, like, and then he tried putting Kerry on top, but Kerry, you know, he's a good guy. He's a baby face. He doesn't want to win like that. And so Michael Hayes gets in Kerry's face and starts shoving him around. And so Michael Hayes he's just going to leave the cage. And then Ric Flair nails Kerry from behind with a knee, and while Michael Hayes is leaving the cage, and so Michael Hayes goes out and, you know, he thinks that Kerry's attacking from behind, and Kerry's head is just hanging there, like, by the cage door, and Terry Gordy was, like, the gatekeeper, and he just slammed the shit out of that door in his head, and I think he got the... I don't even know if he got the pin. Did he get the pin? I can't remember. I think he did.
Oh. I'm pretty sure he did, because I don't think they stopped it, but...
Yeah.
It sounded so awesome. I mean, the sound, just they captured the sound perfectly. I mean, you could hear the slamming of that damn cage. And it's like, you know, it just, you know, the way Kerry moved right after he got hit, you know, away from it. I mean, it looked like, it was one of those things when, you know, I was still young at the time. And, you know, I probably took a lot longer to really, I think I knew deep down, but it took longer for me to admit wrestling was fake because I watched the Von Erichs versus the Freebirds, and, you know, they made it look real. I mean, they made the hatred look real. They made the matches, you know, Kevin always looked like he was trying to kill whoever he was trying to wrestle.
For most people he wrestled.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was awesome.
And Ken Mantell won a pole battle royal. That sounds stupid.
Yeah, this thing gave Ken Mantell like a little bit of a push right.
And he took over Booker the next day, I think.
Oh, that's right. I was thinking Johnny Mantell for a second. Yeah, that's exactly right, because that was Gary's last show, whatever, him and Chris had, but they're like falling out or whatever. He went back to Georgia.
Gary Hart's the one that brought the Freebirds in to do the stuff with the Von Erichs. I think sometimes Ken Mantell, I think some people think Ken Mantell was responsible for that, but it was Gary Hart that brought him in to do that. So
yeah, so he gets credit for the start of it, but it was Ken Mantell who pretty much booked the majority of the feud. for the rest of it. And stuff. We can go ahead. We'll go ahead and switch over to the early Starcade, and then we have time at the end. We'll switch back to some of the world-class shows.
Okay, no problem.
Great idea.
And just a disclaimer, Craig didn't type these results up, so they'll probably be accurate. So I just want to let everybody know that.
Thank you for punching me when I'm down. I appreciate that.
I have a question for Craig. Are you even going to know anything from the first few Starcades?
Yeah, because I got Wikipedia right in front of me.
To be fair to Craig, a lot of the stuff that he messed up with, stuff from like the last few years, which I have trouble remembering. So
thank you. Yeah,
I mean, all the schizophrenic these days. I can't remember shit.
It all blends together, man. I've been watching wrestling since I was 7. I'm gonna be 40 next April.
It would take me 5 minutes to figure out who all won the world or WWE title this year.
No. You're good. You're good at this. Come on, let's be honest. I do know that Starcade 83 was an awesome event, and the only reason I know it was an awesome event is because I saw these on the old after videos. I didn't see the thing, obviously, live, but, you know, just the three matches that I saw on those videos were Abdullah versus Carlos Colon, Piper and Greg Valentine in the dog collar match, and, of course, the main event, Ric Flair and Harley Race in the cage. Awesome, awesome stuff here.
If I'm not mistaken, they were mainly just clips. They weren't actually the whole matches.
Yeah.
I think the Abdullah
Ring
match.
Type, wasn't it Lord of the Rings type? Something like that?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
But I have seen the full Piper and Valentine dog collar match and stuff like that. But, you know, the Abdullah match was just a mess, bloody, bleeding all over, not doing anything, kind of a match, but it was so unique at the time. And then only to be outdone by Piper and Valentine having a bloodbath, and man, it was such a great match.
I'd say that was probably the match of the night, the match everyone remembers more than anything, is Piper and Greg Valentine.
I mean, just the psychology of Valentine attacking Piper's ear.
Yeah. I question that, though, because there's actually some, memorable. We don't have to run down every single card, but with these first few, let's go ahead and run them because of these, you know, it's different names that we don't normally talk about all the time.
Okay. The Assassins defeated Rufus R. Jones and Bugsy McGraw in 8 minutes when Assassin number one pinned Bugsy.
I would assume Assassin number one was Jody Hamilton.
Yeah, is this one the other Assassin was Hercules?
It's around that time frame. It might be a little before, though. But, yeah, it might have been Hercules Hernandez. And you mentioned, what did you say Bugsy McGraw was? The what Jimmy Valiant?
The fat Jimmy Valiant.
The fat Jimmy Valiant. Whereas Rufus R. Jones was the black Jimmy Valiant. And, two comedy guys, basically. And Rufus, I haven't seen a lot of Rufus, but basically, he was the black Jimmy Valiant. That's the best way to describe him, you know.
And in the next match, you had Kevin Sullivan and Mark Lewin beat Scott McGee and Johnny Weaver. The Weaver Lock.
Yeah, the Weaver Lock. And I remember Scott McGee's name. I just can't picture what he looked like. But I don't even know if Sullivan was a face or a heel at this point. I'm thinking he was a heel at this point. I remember because when I first started watching Georgia, he was actually a face back then.
I'm guessing a heel because, you know, that's when Mark Lewin was doing the thing where he came out of the ocean or something.
Yeah, the Purple Haze. He was the Purple Haze,
yeah.
I just don't really remember them doing it in the Carolinas, but I guess maybe they just brought him in for that one show.
They were in Florida, you know.
Yeah,
they would like Florida territory send a match to Starcade or something like that. I think that's probably
what this was.
Yeah, and Johnny, who was Johnny Weaver married to? Penny Banner.
He's married to Penny Banner, and he used to beat her. Turns out he used to beat the shit out of her.
Abdullah the Butcher pinned Carlos Colon, and I think Abdullah in his corner was Hugo Savinovich. Was in Abdullah.
Hugo was wearing a fucking crazy ass fucking like tuxedo style or like suit or whatever. He was
like one of those blue tuxedos.
Yeah, he looked pretty funky, and it was Hugo. And yeah, typical Abdullah Carlos match. They were both covered in blood within minutes and stuff, and basically, Carlos was winning the majority of the whole match until Hugo got involved, and then he got elbow dropped and pinned.
This was a match where I think the biggest move of the match was when the poor referee got elbow smashed by Abdullah the Butcher with that flying elbow.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Speaking of Abdullah, did you read the Daily Update today?
I only skimmed through it. What did they say about Abdullah?
Apparently the paperwork's come back, and he has hepatitis C, according to Devin Nicholson, who was suing him.
Uh-oh. Oh, there's going to be thousands and thousands of lawsuits coming.
Yeah, the only thing I got out of
it before closed.
The only thing I got out of the Daily Update today is Dave claimed that Dee Schneider was the lead singer of Kiss.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Oh, I got to go back to the recent day. Why the hell
Dave knows wrestling.
Is this supposed to be Brian's day? We didn't get a plug today because of this.
Yeah.
We need to be informed of these happenings. But anyway, the next match, I don't think I've seen the whole match, but I've seen a good chunk of it. And it was actually one hell of a match, and this is actually one hell of a heel tag team. And excuse me, I'm sorry. This is probably one of the best heel tag teams ever. It's just that they weren't together for like a long, long time. But Dick Slater and Bob Warren were fucking awesome together.
Yeah, they were two of the best workers at the time period.
They were bumping like crazy for Walker McDaniel. I mean, he was beating the shit out of both of them.
Maybe they were the ones that did the, you know, they were responsible for the main event angle with, you know, when Flair supposedly got his neck broken or something when they pile drove him. But it was a big ruse, and he came out the next week and with a baseball bat.
Yeah, that's right. And, they were awesome. I mean, fuck, they were awesome. They took on Mark Youngblood, who was Jay Youngblood's younger brother, and Wahoo. And this is when Wahoo was still, he was already older by this point, but he was still an ass kicker. And that was a really good match. And then the next one, I'm sure, is your favorite match of the show.
Let's see, we got Jimmy Valiant under a mask as Charlie Brown from Out of Town.
Good grief.
I don't know what that means from Out of Town. Charlie Brown and the Great Kabuki in 13 minutes. And no DQ, no time limit match to win the NWA TV title. Well, that's like Eric Young having the TNA TV title right there, ain't it?
Pretty much, but the fact that this match went 13 minutes, oh my God.
I bet you it was a continuous nerve hold for like 12 of those minutes.
It had to have been. I just remember him, like, he picked up Kabuki, like, to kind of, like, choke him, and Kabuki sprayed the redness in his face.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Now, the next match was Roddy Piper pinned Rick Valentine in 16 minutes in a dog collar match. And they set this up as Piper had been the U.S. champion, and he had title defense against Greg Valentine, and Greg Valentine had just, like, busted Piper's ear open, and they finally had to stop the match because of the blood. They were afraid he was going to lose his hearing. I mean, his ear was a bloody mess, and so Greg Valentine won the U.S. title from him, and this is, you know, the kind of big blow-off match that they came back with. And I don't think that Valentine was the U.S. champion, but the title wasn't on the line in this dog collar match. It's actually, like, they used to play up all the, like, especially in NWA, as being, like, respectable. We don't want our titles involved in, like, dog collar matches and I quit matches and stuff like that back then. So that was a non-title match. But, yeah, this was This is a brutal match.
Yeah.
I just remember he put the fucking chain, he got behind Valentine, put the chain over his head, put the chain in his mouth,
yep.
and started pulling back and forth and back and forth. And you could just see how fucking uncomfortable Greg Valentine, I shouldn't even say uncomfortable, that motherfucker was hurting. And then he wraps it around his face and he's got it under his nose, pushing his nose up. And then Piper just fucking knocks the shit out of it. I mean, that was one of the hardcore matches that I had seen up until that point. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then, like, when he, like, he started whipping, like, Valentine, like, I think he was doing it towards the leg and not, like, a real, like, his face or anything, but he, like, just rapid shots with the chain, you know, whipping him, and I mean, yeah, well, and then Gordon Soley added so much. This was like an example of when Gordon Soley was at his best and was like, Jim Ross, where he was like, back to the ear, you know, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, it was awesome.
That was such an awesome visual with that ear just bleeding.
Yeah,
like
there was so many visuals in that match, like the. You know, Piper had the chain wrapped around his eyes at one point, and like Ed was saying, how Piper had the chain in Valentine's mouth, and he's got his foot on the back of his head pushing into it. And this was like my version of Undertaker Foley in the Hell in the Cell. You know, this was the thing that I thought was the greatest match of all times, where, you know, some of our... younger listeners, that was like the most crazy thing they've ever seen.
You know, this was like when I first saw this Lord of the Rings tape, like in the video store or something. This is when I had started watching wrestling and said, wait, he's not in this company. I mean, he's not in the NWA anymore. I mean, I didn't know,
right.
I didn't know too much at that point about people being in different companies and stuff like that. So I thought it was weird. Roddy Piper and Greg Valentine, who were in WWF at the time, and they're having this, and they're buddying up on Piper's shit, and they're beating the shit out of each other, and, you know, it's Starrcade. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah,
you look at a few of these guys, and Vince took a lot of these guys not long after this show.
Mm-hmm.
Piper and Valentine. A year later, he took Steamboat.
Gordon.
With, Bob Orton.
Yeah.
Tried to get Harley Race before this show.
That's right. Let's go ahead with the next one.
The next one is Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood beat Jack and Jerry Briscoe in 12 minutes and 48 seconds in a no DQ match to win the NWA World Tag Team title. Well, say he's been in the news this week. Angelo Mosca was a special referee.
Right, crazy old man getting into a fight.
Did you say that fight he got into? At that
I haven't seen the video yet. I need to watch it, actually, but I read about it. It sounded pretty crazy.
I feel bad for some of the people in that audience. They just look like they're embarrassed to be there.
I bet they were. I bet it was a pretty crazy sight. But going to the team of Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood, had they come around a couple years later, they would be the most famous wrestling tag team, and not the Rock and Roll Express as far as babyface, because this is the ultimate babyface tag team ever. I mean, this team was just—it's a lot of people don't know about them because they were, you know, they were in the early '80s. But this, what made them awesome was like the Rock and Roll Express was the same thing every match. It's kill Ricky Morton for a while, and he'll make the hot tag to Robert Gibson. Well, the thing with Steamboat and Youngblood is you could beat the shit out of either one, and then you had a totally different hot tag. If they were killing Youngblood, Steamboat came in with the karate chops and karate kicks and all that, and if Steamboat was getting his ass kicked, Jay came in doing the war dance and doing the chops and the Indian, you know, all the Indian stuff, and they were an awesome, awesome tag team. It's just too bad not enough people had seen them. And they were taking on Jack and Jerry Briscoe, who two of the most plain-looking wrestlers, even at that time. I always thought that about the Briscoes. They always look so plain, but Jack was pretty awesome. And Jerry was okay back then. But
what I remember about this match, they're doing the introductions, and Jerry's got his title belt around his waist, and he just goes over to the top rope and stands on the top rope during the announcement with his hands on his hips. It was the stupidest thing I've ever seen somebody do during, like, ring introductions. He's just standing on the top rope.
Yeah, he's always been kind of a goof. But, yeah, that was
Well, going back to Rock and Roll Express, Rock and Roll Express was like a really, not, no offense to Robert, but it was like a one-man tag team to me, you know?
Yeah.
Ricky Morton. Oh, yeah, Robert's there, too. Yeah, forgot about him.
And then, of course,
when did Jay Young die? He died like the next year, didn't he?
He died the next year. He actually, you know, a lot of people think Dave Von Erich was like the first big wrestling death, but actually it was Jay Youngblood, and he died. I think he might even have died out of the country, and but it didn't get a lot of play. He didn't get a lot of play. It was David that was actually like the first one, and then, you know.
Didn't Steamboat like go into semi-retirement after this match and they had to vacate the titles?
God, I don't even remember. I just remember, I think what ended up happening with them was at that point, Jay was really getting into like doing a lot of coke and drugs, and Steamboat was actually asking to kind of get away from him because I guess he could see he was spiraling. Or getting ready to start spiraling and then want to go down with him.
Yeah, Jay Youngblood, I think he was getting the drugs, and I think he was getting fat and stuff like that, getting out of shape real bad.
Yeah, he was getting a little weight there, too, at the end. And the same thing happened with the brothers. The brothers weren't, you know, they were normal when they came in, and for years they were fat.
Yeah. And then you had the main event was Ric Flair pinned Harley Race in 23 minutes. A steel cage match to win the NWA World title. Gene Kaniski was a special referee, and a terrible referee he was.
He was so slow.
I know. It was like Dick the Bruiser at Starrcade.
But Dick the Bruiser was so cool. He still had like a lot of charisma.
And the finish was kind of goofy finish of this match was kind of goofy. And it looked like he was supposed to, like, go for a body press and, like, his Harley was supposed to, like, fall over Gene Kaniski or something. I'm not sure exactly what was supposed to happen, but they've had better matches.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like, you could tell it was kind of botched, but they still went with it. And everyone still went crazy for it, so I guess it was okay. Your thoughts, Craig?
I'm sorry, what?
Your thoughts on the match?
I haven't seen the whole match, I'm going to be honest. I've seen clips of it on the Lord of the Rings video. I can't really make an honest opinion of it. But what I did see of it, it going 23 minutes, it was probably kind of boring. Just guessing. I know it's
the end of it, after the match, was kind of like when Flair beat Vader in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. You know, when they went back to the dressing room, you know, they did all interviews with all the guys, like, congratulating them and stuff like that. It's kind of reminiscent of that.
Yeah, it was like a double party, actually, because you had Steamboat and Youngblood were partying, too. So it was like a really, really big, happy ending to a show.
Yeah. And I think that was Starrcade 3, I think that's the first one Dusty booked. I think that's the first show he booked for, like, Crockett. I know he came up with Starrcade 9.
Are you sure? Because I don't see Dusty Rhodes' name booked anywhere on the card.
He was at the show. They interviewed him, like, in the crowd, so, you know.
Oh, maybe he was just coming in.
Yeah,
maybe you're right. Maybe he did.
Do you guys remember on TBS, like, on Saturday mornings, they had a video game show called Starrcade?
A video game show?
Yeah, it was like they had the host and these two kids play like Pac-Man or something against each other.
Yeah, they play for like 30 seconds, and whoever scores the highest points won, right?
I always thought that was cool. Like, video game, game show. Never saw one of those before.
Yeah. It, It was way ahead of its time because, unfortunately, it was calling games like fucking Frogger and some other pretty boring-ass fucking shitty games.
That was at an age where,
I watched it all the time.
that was at that age where, you know, now when you play video games, like, you want to finish the game. Finishing a game never entered my mind at that point, you know, back then.
Right.
I didn't know you could finish games.
There wasn't a finish. That's the thing.
I did finish E.T., though.
I had that game for Atari.
Pieces.
Are you talking about the Atari game?
Yes. That's horrible game.
He made it home, did he?
Then my unfortunately, mine did not make it to the landfill where they stored all the other, you know, E.T. games because they were so horrible.
Right.
That game was so bad.
I don't even know how I finished it. I think really the one that most people probably finished when they were younger was probably Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, I'd guess that one, yeah.
Yeah. That's only because I found the Warp Zone. Remember the Warp Zone?
I can't say that I do.
Oh, God, never mind. Say the knowledge he's easy. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, anyway. Go to Starcade 1984. It was the $1 million challenge in Greensboro, North Carolina. And they drew 16,000 people, and closed circuit television drew 26,000 people. Let's start at the top. Denny Brown pinned Mike Davis to win the NWA Junior Heavyweight Championship.
Denny Brown, the longest reigning NWA Junior Heavyweight Champion of all time.
Yeah.
And so you got that. And Mike Davis was one half of the Rock and Roll RPMs, who later found was then involved in a shitty bungee matching global, which somehow he found the moon rock, and then he became an awesome character after that.
In the next match, Brian Adias pinned Mr. Ito. That sounds like a skippable match. I had no idea who Mr. Ito was. Then the Florida champion, Jesse Barr, who was later became a Jimmy Jack Funk, pinned Mike Graham in 11 minutes, 45 seconds. I heard Mike Graham also invented Starcade. What was that?
I heard Mike Graham invented a lot of stuff. But then, Mike, what's the story with Mike Graham and Sid?
Oh, and I don't know, something was going on. It's like Pillman and Sid were feuding on TV, and you know, Sid wouldn't sell for the guy or something like that, and they were in a bar or something, and I think Pillman and Sid were about to fight or something, and and so Sid says, "Wait right here," or something. He goes out to his car and he brings back a squeegee. Yeah, I guess he's gonna fight him with a squeegee. And I think Mike Graham took it away from him or something like that. I think that's what the story was.
There's a story about Brent Kremen that I could throw in here real quick. Of course, there's the one story about the first time I ran into Brent before I knew it was Brent. He's, you know, the guy I saw throwing a pop at Sid in a lumberjack match and yelling, "Why did you stab Marty Lundy?" over and over again. And so he got drug out of the arena. But the next time I saw him, Brian had told me, we're going up to Canada with this guy Brent, and he's a little worried because this guy Brent had gotten thrown out of a Tacoma Dome show after throwing ice at Sid. And I go, that's the kid I got saw getting dragged out of the Tacoma Dome. And so Brent was like, oh, my gosh. So we went up to Canada and we saw the International Incident pay-per-view, and then they filmed 4 episodes of Raw in Seattle the next night, and then they ran over to Yakima, which is on the east side of our state, to do Superstars. Well, somewhere in between Raw on Monday and Tuesday doing the All-Star tapings, Brian had convinced Brent to buy a squeegee and take it to the Superstars tapings because Sid was in on all the shows. He was so the funniest thing, I think he had like second row tickets, but as Sid is in the ring, if you watch that episode of the taping of Superstars, as Sid is in the ring posing, you can just see this shadow of a squeegee being swung back and forth in front of the television camera, right in front of Sid's boots. And that's our good friend, Nutty Brent Kremen.
That's fine. But the next match actually sounds kind of awesome to me.
I say we have
really?
Fast Buzz Tyler beats the Zane Bowie Express in 4 minutes and 46 seconds in an elimination match. Well, that's a short one.
Yeah.
The Assassin was the sole survivor.
The Zane Bowie Express, though, man, that was an awesome, awesome tag team.
Kareem
they basically
Muhammad
had two giant, super fat dudes wearing camouflage, acting like they were from Africa, like mercenaries from Africa. And it was Ray Candy and Bad Leroy Brown.
Oh.
But I just remember seeing them when I was a kid. They were a sight to see.
I think both are dead now.
Probably right.
Then we had Manny Fernandez defeated Black Bart in 7 minutes to win the Mid-Atlantic Brass Knuckles title. I had no idea what that is.
Huh.
Adam, you know what? Back in the early 80s and late 70s, every territory had like a Brass Knuckles champ. They didn't always have it. It was basically when somebody was brought in for a little while. It was basically a hardcore title, but... I don't know what the rules were. It was just basically like a no DQ match or something. I mean, it's not like they were wearing brass knuckles, you know?
It was like a world class. Was it Abdul the Butcher was like a brass knuckles champion in world's class or something? I never understood that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just one of those. I don't know.
Was like a brass knuckles champion for like a. I mean, there were so many. So many territories had one, and It was always a title you could put on, like, the top brawler or somebody who came in, like, Abdullah, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, it's basically like the hardcore title in WWF later on, you know, just would be on the line during, like, a skip match or something like that. And the next match, Paul Jones and Jimmy Valiant.
Well, real quick, at this time, Manny Fernandez was fucking awesome at that.
Yeah, he was.
At this point in the 80s. I mean, he was fucking awesome.
Paul Jones defeated Jimmy Valiant in a Loser Leaves Town Tuxedo Street Fight match. I refuse to watch.
I can't remember this. This was no good.
Well, you probably remember in a different match because they feuded for like 10 years. And they probably all blend together.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Worst feud in history.
It was awesome, dude. I don't know what you're talking about.
And see, back then, they had the Loser Leaves Town match. They'd do that for like 30 or 90 days or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So really, when they came back, they weren't really going back on their stipulation. They just, you know, they served their time.
Yeah,
Even then,
they still didn't always adhere to it because I'm pretty sure he came back as Charlie Brown again, just like Dusty Rhodes would do the Midnight Rider and kind of a thing. So I'm pretty sure it just led to Charlie Brown coming back for a while.
If WWE did that, then people couldn't say that they weren't living up to their stiffs if they came back in like 30 days or 90 days. Or they
I don't know why.
Like a 1 week time limit since with the way they do stuff today. So
I don't know why they don't bring back the Midnight Rider gimmick more. It's so awesome.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, they could have done it with Cena that one time.
Oh, yeah. Didn't they try with it at the house shows?
Yeah.
Juan Cena. He was Juan Cena.
And probably the only time they did it was when they brought back the giant machine.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Everybody was a machine. That was so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember I saw it was like in 91. This was after Savage. She got attacked by Jake Roberts and Undertaker at the wedding. And this was just on the house shows. It wasn't on TV, but somebody called Mr. Madness came back in a mask to take on Jake Roberts.
Oh, awesome. At one of the house shows in Tacoma Dome, I got the Super Machine, the Giant Machine, and the Hulk Machine.
I remember they had the Piper Machine at one point.
Piper Machine, really?
Yeah, the Piper Machine.
They had a Junkyard Dog Machine, and they had everybody had it. At one point or another, everybody was putting on the mask.
Oh, my.
Super Machine, that means it was right before Demolition came up, because that was Bill Eadie with the Super Machine.
And what done one was Blackjack Mulligan, I think.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of them.
Next match was Mid-Atlantic Champion Ron Bass beat Dick Slater by disqualification.
Dick Slater, he was like Manny Fernandez. He was also awesome at this point. I mean,
yeah.
Dick Slater basically... Dick Slater can actually mimic Terry Funk and do every single thing Terry Funk does in a match. And he can also do interviews for Terry Funk, because at one point Terry Funk was coming in, I don't know if it was Southwest or somewhere, he was coming in, so he did a promo tape for him, and the audible was horrible and you couldn't understand him, so they had a Dick Slater cut a voiceover, and nobody never knew that it wasn't Terry Funk.
Ole Anderson and Keith Larson, they got beat by Ivan and Nikita Koloff. I think it's probably one of Nikita's first matches.
Probably.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
It's probably not very good.
This was back when he was huge.
Yeah.
He was huge most of the time.
No, he got small there for a while there. But I don't remember.
He looked better when he shaved his head after that stupid haircut he had, like in 1988. Mm-hmm. God, it was horrible.
Yep. I think he grew the hair to keep people from noticing that he was smaller or something. Because that's when he got small, was when he had the hair.
Yeah. The next match was probably the best match on the show. Was the TV champion Tully Blanchard pinned Ricky Steamboat in 13 minutes. These guys were great together.
Yeah, they were awesome, and I'm pretty sure this probably left where Steamboat actually left the territory to go to WWE pretty soon after this.
Yeah, he left, I think, maybe a little bit after in February of the next year. It was about maybe 3 months or so. These are two guys that you can never see playing like a heel or a babyface. At least I could. Tully Blanchard is a babyface. I don't see it. Steamboat is a heel.
I actually saw him do it one time.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, he was babyface against the Sheik Curtis for like a short period of time.
Hmm.
He was actually okay, but it was weird.
But he just
the next match,
a babyface. He was too smug looking, too arrogant, I guess.
Yeah, but the next match. In one hand, it sounds awesome, and in the other hand, it's probably a bad match. But you have Wahoo McDaniel, the U.S. the NWA U.S. champion, Wahoo McDaniel pinning superstar Billy Graham, and Wahoo could have some badass matches with people who weren't afraid to get their ass kicked. But Billy Graham wasn't one of those type of people, so I'm kind of wondering how the match was. You know, there's probably a lot of stalling involved.
This is when Billy Graham was doing the kung fu gimmick.
Did he do that outside of the WWE, though? Or I think he only did that in the WWE.
Did what?
The kung fu gimmick?
No,
oh,
he
you
did
know
it.
What? He did. He did it. He did it after. He did do it after. I remember. Yeah. Okay. But I remember those promos and interviews. I'll probably be one and only person in the entire world who loves the Billy Graham master of kung fu or karate.
Yeah. I saw way too much Billy Graham in 86 when I had to watch his fucking hip operation on Superstars Wrestling.
That was so gross, man. I can't believe they showed that shit.
Yeah.
Oh, sick. They
like watching
that
fucking Yelp panel or something.
Oh, my God. How did they get away with that? That was crazy.
I don't know. Maybe because it was a medical thing and trying to educate or something. I didn't need that education.
Oh, yeah, that was fucked up.
Then you had NWA World Champion Ric Flair beat Dusty Rhodes in 12 minutes and 10 seconds. When special referee Joe Frazier stopped the match, did Rhodes exist bleeding?
And it wasn't that bad of a cut either, wasn't it?
No, I don't think it was that bad. That they were trying to like Joe Frazier against Dusty Rhodes, but nothing ever came of it.
Well, I can see why, but you're talking about a show that had Manny Fernandez, Dick Slater, Ron Bass, Ole Anderson, Wahoo McDaniel. I'm sure there was blood on that undercard. I'm sure there was way more blood in the undercard than there were in that match because it wasn't that bad. And then, in boxing at the time, you know, it seemed like any time they stopped the fight to check for blood, it was almost always going to kind of be stopped regardless of how bad it was. And it was kind of like that. But, I mean, it was like, that was one. This is an example of a dusty finish that, you know, was not a good finish, you know. It's just not the smart thing to do.
Yeah, as we get on in these starcades, some of these main events has shitty finishes. This would be their big event of the year. I always give, WWE credit because generally they always have, a clean finish in all their main events, at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it's true. It was – I always liked the blood stoppage finish because it makes sense. In this case, it really didn't, but then they could put the heat on Joe Frazier because he was a boxer and he made the decision. But I remember the one with, Flair and Lex Luger.
Where it looked like Luger popped a pimple or something. He was
less blood, and the ref stopped it. So there's a trend there somewhere.
You remember
that's
when
the wrong way to do it? As far as a right way to do that is the Kerry Von Erich Jerry Lawler match.
Yeah, that's true. That was a ton of blood. That was ridiculous.
I remember even Halloween Havoc 1 year, Goldberg and Sid. Do you remember that when they did the blood stoppage?
I remember watching that match, but no.
It was probably one of the only leg jobs Sid ever did, but he looked as bad as Kerry Von Erich in that Super Clash match.
I barely can remember that.
And I remember a couple years ago, Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho, where Shawn's eye got busted open.
Mm.
Yeah, that was a good one.
So,
always.
Move on to Starrcade 85, The Gathering. It's on Closer.
Are we going to go through every Starrcade? We're already at an hour and 15.
Well, we go to as far as we can.
Okay.
Wait, what did you say?
At least the ones that are on Thanksgiving or the holidays we'll get through. So,
Yeah.
All right.
Great season, Zach. You don't have nothing to talk about. But anyway, I like these little cards anyway. So first match I'm marking out for because it's Downtown, the World Junior Heavyweight Champion Downtown, Danny Brown, against Rocky King. And just the fact that Rocky King was in a world title match just sounds fucking awesome to me.
Well, with the Junior Heavyweight title, come on.
Oh, but still, dude, this is a World Heavyweight title.
Who won the World Heavyweight title? Or Junior Heavyweight title?
Well, whatever. It was still world. That's all that matters.
Don Carnoodle,
it was a pretty good little match at that.
Yeah. Don Carnoodle, print Tommy Lane. That's probably boring. Christopher Khrushchev and Sam Houston to win the vacant Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship.
Sam Houston was awesome at this point. He was freaking awesome. I'll never forget watching that match on fucking Saturday night with Ric Flair, where all the other wrestlers came out to support Sam Houston because he was like, you know, it was almost like he was going to get the upset. I mean, it was one of the best TV matches of that era. It was awesome.
That guy was so skinny, he used to have to jump right out of the shower to get wet.
I knew you were going to say something. As soon as I started talking about it, I knew you were going to make a skinny joke.
But that guy was so skinny. Oh, my God.
He looked like a broomstick or a mop.
Yeah. But he was good at this point. This is before he became super alcoholic.
One of those kind of guys. Kendall Windham was the worst-looking one.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. When Flair talks about wrestling a broomstick, he's talking about Sam Houston.
And he was going around bumping uglies with baby doll.
Oh, good on him.
Then Ron Bass pinned Black Bart.
She was probably twice his weight. Anyway.
Yeah. They were the original X-Pac in China.
Pretty much.
Ron Bass pinned Black Bart in a Bull Rope match and got 5 minutes with J.J. Dillon after winning. And then J.J. Dillon pinned Ron Bass in a Bull Rope match when Black Bart interfered. Buddy Landell pinned Terry Taylor to win the National Heavyweight title.
I've never heard being pinned.
So what?
I think I remember that as being, you know, decent or good.
Yeah. Well, both guys were pretty good at that point, especially Terry Taylor.
Yeah. And match number 7, the real main event of the show.
Yeah, Magnum T.A. beat Tully Blanchard in a steel cage I quit match to win the U.S. Heavyweight title in about 16 minutes. To me, the best three, like, I quit matches are this match, Steve Austin and Bret Hart, and Flair and Terry Funk,
yeah.
I think, are probably the three best ones.
I could call, yeah.
And as much as I don't agree with Brian on so much shit, though, I do agree with the point of, like, I've always hated the WWE or WWF versions of the cage matches where you have to escape. I always prefer the NWA version of the cage match where it was, you know, a fight to a finish. And this one had one hell of a finish when fucking Magnum grabbed that fucking wooden, that piece of wooden, it was like almost like a stake.
Like a
heart of a vampire.
Yeah.
And just like it was, and then Telly was just screaming. It was, man, it looked real. It looked fucking real, dude.
I like the WWF cage matches because it takes me 5 seconds if I want to get out of a cage. I don't care who's in there with me. Daniel Bryan couldn't get out of the cage the other night. That's bullshit.
At least it looked legit when Bryan was trying to get out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The bell rang and he turned around and ran for the corner.
When Mark Henry, he was trying to climb to get out of the cage, I said, well, I'd have gone the opposite way and got hit, and I'd hit the floor before he did.
True.
Anyway. Yeah, that was the Stockwood match. This was one of the best, one of the bloodiest matches, like one of the first real bloody matches I ever saw. These two guys hated each other, too. I mean, the way they went at it, it was like more than a feud. You could tell these guys despised each other. So.
And I remember when it carried over when Magnum was all like hurt after the accident and he was doing like interviews or whatever, and Telly actually got all crazy and brought up the match. You know, he brought up the match and that he kind of grabbed Magnum and was shaking Magnum. And I just remember Dusty Rhodes hits the fucking ring with a baseball bat. And knocked the shit out of one of the Crockett's by accident. It was one hell of an intense scene. It was crazy.
It reminded me of when Shane Douglas shook the Pitbull's halo.
ECW.
On TV, ECW.
Yeah, that was great.
And let's see. Then you had the Rock and Roll Express beat Ivan and Nikita Koloff in 7 minutes in a steel cage match to win the NBA Tag Team Championships.
This was their second championship, World Tag Team Championship. They had won it earlier in the year from Ivan and Crusher Khrushchev.
Main event going 7 minutes.
Well, they probably ain't gone long. I mean, they could have took some of
that
wrong back.
That seems like a tour match for that territory. You'd expect like maybe 20 or 25 minutes or something.
Yeah. Well, let's be honest. Ivan and Nikita didn't light the world on fire with their work rate.
What are you talking about? Ivan Koloff is fucking awesome.
Okay.
I always liked Nikita. Nikita's always been one of my.
I liked Nikita. He was intense in the ring, but his work was not good.
Unless he was in there with Ric Flair.
Right. Well, that's a given.
Yeah, but to say that about Ivan, that's just, I don't know. That's just very snobbish. But
right,
anyway,
he had the other card was at Atlanta, Georgia, in the Omni. 14,000 people. He had
real quick about the Omni. I used to love watching the Georgia Saturday show back in the day when they would announce. You know, they would do like the they would announce like wherever they're going. Oh, we're going to Carolina. We're going over here, here, here. And then at the end, they climax with the Omni show, and they had like all the cards, and you're like, wow, I wish I could see that, you know.
Yeah, it was like the first time I saw this when I was young. I didn't know any better, and I said, Mom, can we go to the Omni? See Dusty and Ric Flair.
The Omni was like the greatest building ever, you know. It was like Madison Square Garden, but for the South.
Yeah, that's what it was. And well, my mom didn't want to drive me from Mississippi to Georgia to see Dusty Rhodes. I get to go.
Weird.
Anyway, in the first match, Thunderfoot pinned the Italian Stallion. I think Thunderfoot, that was Joel Deaton, I believe. You remember Joel Deaton?
Well, yeah, I remember Joel Deaton, but don't forget there were two Thunderfoots. They should have been the Thunderfeet, but, you know, they were still the Thunderfoots.
Yeah.
They were like
the Conquistadors tag team, you know, just like a decent tag team, you know, just like to do like tag matches or something like that. Jobber Superstars stars or something. So
yeah, basically. And then speaking of Jobber Superstars, the Italian Stallion, one of my favorite jobbers of all time. He always had good little matches.
Yeah, he was very good.
Yeah. And he was a spaghetti eating champion of the world. Don't forget that.
Yep. And I think he trained the Hardy, so he's to blame. Anyway.
I see. He's trying to do drugs.
Pez Watley beat Mike Graham. This was before he came Shaska Watley.
Pez Watley, I'll never forget. This is like one of those moments that sticks out forever. It was on Georgia Championship Wrestling, and this was when Mad Dog Buzz Hoyer was like running roughshod over everybody and beating everybody on TV. And Pez Watley came in and was going to have a match with him. And I'm thinking, who was it? Was it the dog that fired him up? And he went in there and he got the upset on Mad Dog. And Mad Dog freaked out and wanted like a rematch. So they had like another little rematch. And he beat him again. And they like kind of, I don't want to say made him a superstar, but they made him a star in Georgia in that one show. It was awesome.
Yeah. I remember when he was in Continental, he was Willie B. Hurt was his name.
That's my gimmick.
He'll
my friend
was on him and call him. They call him Watermelon Willie. Something you would never hear on TV today. So
that's horrible.
Yeah. It's fucking funny as shit, though.
That's like that's half of Roddy Piper's material back in 1985.
Right.
Saying shit
right.
Like that. Manny Fernandez defeated Abdullah Butcher in the Mexican Death Match, which was a sombrero on a pole match, and why Abdullah Butcher was in this kind of a match,
huh.
I don't remember. Just like John Tenta and Big Bubba in the Carson City Silver Dollars match with the Silver Dollars on the pole, and Jimmy Hart's the only one that can climb the pole, because everybody else is too fat. Manny Fernandez against Abdullah Butcher, of course you know there was blood in this match.
You know,
I'm
many
pretty sure.
Might want to go get his check for hepatitis C after what I read today. So.
Oh, goodness. How often? And he has a rib restaurant.
Yeah.
Hmm. Glad we didn't stop there last year.
That's kind of true, right?
And Billy Graham defeated the Barbarian by DQ in an arm wrestling match. This is when Billy, he had gone back to the tie-dyes, and he was a babyface right here, and he beat DQ in an arm wrestling match. And then they had the regular match. Billy Graham beat the Barbarian in 3 minutes via DQ. So this was probably a horrible experience for anybody watching.
You don't say.
Until he cut an interview.
Billy Graham,
I think everybody on the show bladed in one point or the other, if I remember correctly. We had some of these matches.
I wouldn't doubt it, but we named.
Had Ole and Arn Anderson, who were the national tag team champions, defeated Wahoo McDaniel and Billy Jack Haynes when Arn pinned McDaniel. And Wahoo and Billy Jack Haynes were the national tag team champions. Isn't that kind of like the same thing?
Pretty much. They were pretty much,
US tag title,
the same thing.
National tag title, that's like, it was like co-champions or something. I don't know. It's funny.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's like when they had the national heavyweight champion, the U.S. heavyweight champion, like in the same promotion at the same time.
And this is when Billy Jack Haynes is in a different territory every other month, basically.
Yeah, I think he got mad at Dusty like a week after this and quit. I don't know.
Yeah, he was in like he went to Portland, Minneapolis, Florida, Georgia. He went everywhere.
He was crazy.
My brother bumped into Billy Jack probably, I would guess, 6 years ago. He was down in Portland. He was in a pub with some of his buddies after work, and Billy Jack was on the bar. And my brother went up to him and says, "Oh, my brother's such a huge fan of yours," and blah, 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 blah. And Billy Jack gave him a card to this gym that he worked out at to tell your brother to come see me. And he gave him this card, and my brother handed it off to me. And that was like the last sighting of Billy Jack in years. Was my
I remember
brother bumping
it. Wasn't it probably around that time? Was that the one where he got the shit beat out of him and got put in the hospital because he owed somebody some money or something?
Yeah, it was, it was probably six or eight months before that.
I just remember he was doing those crazy
things. Right?
I tried. I can't. No, I actually, went through some of my connections and, nobody knows where he's at. Nobody knows how to get a hold of him.
Well, getting in touch with Rob Feinstein, they did those interviews a couple of years ago.
Well,
those shoot interviews.
Okay, that was my contact, and Rob says the guy doesn't own a computer. So, which I totally believe.
He's the one that said, like in one of those interviews, said that Daniel Benoit was Vince's kid. I mean, that's how bad it was. I mean, that's just too absurd even to, like, laugh at, just about.
Oh, my God. What a
we got 1 minute left on streaming time. So everyone check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download the Stream Marks show at AngryMarks.com along with a lot of other shows like the Angry Marks show. So everyone check out AngryMarks.com.
This next match.
Well, one of your favorites.
This is a dark, dark day for tag team wrestling. Jimmy Valiant and Miss Atlanta Lively, who was Ronnie Garvin in drag, defeated the Midnight Express in a street fight match when Miss Atlanta Lively pinned Bobby Eaton. Anytime you see Jimmy Valiant and he's beating the Midnight Express, that makes you kind of want to vomit.
Right. And Ronnie Garvin was not the world's best worker either. Let's be honest.
Oh God! Oh my God! What are you talking?
Oh, come on, dude.
I thought he was pretty good.
God, he was awesome at this club.
No, you're so wrong. You are so wrong.
He needed to beat the shit out of people back then.
Yes, that's why he was a horrible worker. It's fake.
Well, I enjoy it.
Oh, my God.
This is better than watching Ronnie Garvin and Ric Flair beat the fuck out of each other.
Oh, a bunch of smash to your chest ain't going to kill you or do anything.
He would punch people in the face. He punched Flair in the face so many times.
He was a man with a hand as a stone.
Good.
That
of course he was.
It was a work punch. He didn't touch him.
Oh, please. That guy
he
was
so sucked
in
this
sad.
Match is only because he was in high heels.
Drew his death perception.
I'm just imagining watching Ronnie Garvin and Ric Flair beat the piss at each other.
Oh, my God. Those guys. Oh, Garvin was such a stiff prick. Oh, my goodness.
I'd rather get slapped around by Ronnie Garvin and have, like, a match with the Steiners.
Granted, I'll give you that, because I don't like getting dumped on my head.
Or Robert.
I don't know. Chops hurt, though. I mean, I'm sure Ronnie Garvin can hit harder than Roderick Strong, and Roderick Strong beat the shit out of me. So but I think you're right. I don't think I would want to be dropped on my head, so yeah, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, any of those guys in Japan or the Steiner brothers, you know what I mean? Those, you know, the Masaos of the world. Yeah, I would take a punch from Ronnie Garvin.
Ronnie Garvin was one of the greatest NWA champions for 1 month.
Yeah,
you know
that big old.
So funny? That feud was so hot until he won the title.
Right. And how did he win it? A sunset flip.
You watch. Wait till Zack Ryder wins the WWE Championship. That's going to be Ronnie Garvin all over again.
Yeah. Going to win. After the chase is over, the romance is gone. So, you know.
Yeah, but you just wanted the world title change at that point because it didn't happen every month on pay-per-view.
Right.
You know, it's like Flair would hold his title for a year, year and a half or something.
Yep.
So then when Ronnie Garvin won, it was like, oh, great, he won. You know, now what?
Let's put it back on Flair.
Then in the main event, you had a Dusty Rhodes defeated Ric Flair via DQ. They did a Dusty finish in this match. Rhodes, referee goes outside, and I can't remember who it was. I think it was Arn Anderson or somebody. No, Arn Anderson interfered when the ref was down, and I think Tommy Young saw it. And Dusty Rhodes rolled up Ric Flair for the 1-2-3 in an inside cradle, and then Tommy Young reversed the decision.
Mm.
Let's go back and look at some of the arena reports and those PWIs. Look how many times Dusty Rhodes gets disqualified because it's a reverse decision.
Yeah. Well, it's because it was his finish.
You know, the Dusty finish thing, it's one like, I mean, logically, if you use it once, you got to use it all the time, right?
Right. Absolutely. But,
I mean, it's just so stupid that it happens sometimes, but then it doesn't happen in other matches. It's just,
uh-huh.
I don't know. But that's just one of those wrestling things that they, sometimes you do that just to do something, I guess. I don't know.
So do we have another half hour of time left, or are we done? Okay. So we're off the live feed now.
Yeah, we're off the live feed, but we'll go ahead and we'll do a part two show or something.
Yeah, we should, because we're at 86, and of course that's the Night of the Skywalkers, and that was like one of my favorite of all time. But do we want to wrap up like pretty quick, or do we want to save 86 for next week, or what do you want to do?
Well, considering that you actually have something to talk about, we'll just wait till next week.
Well, okay, we'll save that for next week, so I'll have something to talk about. So, since we're off the air live, I will share a story about my cheap friend Brian Alvarez.
Good, because okay? I got things to say about Brian Alvarez too.
Okay, so not last week, but the week before that, of course, was Survivor Series. And as you remember, the last time I was on the show before the last week's Drunkcast, you remember that I was going to go out to Brian's early that day to do what? Remember, I was going to do some work for him. What
oh,
was I
you're
going
gonna,
to do
like,
for him?
Post up some picture frames or something.
Yes, I was going to hang pictures for him.
Hang pictures.
Okay.
Yeah,
because it's really difficult, manly stuff. So, I know Brian and Whitney don't have, like, anything in the house to hang said pictures with. So I stopped off at Target, and I got these picture hangers. I got, like, 3 packs of them. They were $2.99 a piece. And I go out to Brian's house. I'm there an hour and a half early. And for about an hour and 15 minutes, I hung pictures for them. I hung their wedding photos. I hung a, you know, I don't know if Brian can't read a tape measure or he doesn't understand how a hammer works. I don't know exactly why he can't hang a picture.
Understand how a hammer works.
I'm just saying. So I hang these pictures for him. And we sit down and start watching Survivor Series. And Brian goes, I'm hungry. And I go, I'm also hungry. And he goes, I'm going to order pizza. I said, that sounds awesome. So he orders pizza. And as we get done, as he's ordering, I said, hey, man, grab some chicken wings, too. That sounds awesome. He's like, okay. And so at the end of the night, as we're packing up, I said, hey, man, can I get like $10 from you? Because I bought all those hooks to hang pictures with. And he goes, Craig, I just bought you pizza. And I said, Brian, you bought everybody pizza. Vinny, Bill, and this other guy, and, you know, there's like a bunch of guys there. You bought everybody pizza, and I shelled out cash for this, and I just, you know, thought you could reimburse me for this, you know. And he gave me a hard time. He's like, hold on, I'll ask my wife. Now, remember, I got there an hour and a half early to help this guy out because he can't hang his own pictures. This is how cheap this son of a gun is. I was enraged by the time I left that house. I wanted to throttle him.
He is a cheap bastard, let's be honest.
I worked for like an hour and a half for him and shelled out my own money, and he paid me off with some bad Domino's pizza and then didn't want to reimburse me for the hardware that I bought for his house. I wanted to strangle him.
So did he at least pay? Did he reimburse you in the end?
Yes. He finally got his wife's purse where his balls are and picked out $10 out of there and handed it to me. I was gonna remind him there was tax, but I didn't want to fight that battle. So,
oh God, that was a good thing he did. He would have broke out a calculator and counted every percentage.
You should have said, "Well, Brian, you didn't give me the option of being paid in pizza. Maybe I don't want to be paid in pizza."
But he paid everybody else in pizza, and they didn't hang pictures for him. Everybody ate pizza. That was my point. And he goes, well, I bought chicken wings, and I was so mad. And I'm sitting in his house, you know, that is, you know, it's ridiculously huge for two people. And we're looking at his 70-inch TV, and I can't get $10 out of the guy. Unbelievable.
I know. It's like he's not making any money.
And his two new leased cars in the front. I wanted to kill him. I really wanted to kill him.
I had a roommate in college that we stayed in. It was about, I think it was like three of us. We rented this house. And we're getting ready to, we're moving out for, you know, for the summer. And roommate still owes like $500 in like in bills and rent and stuff like that, which we're waiting for him to get the money, but you know, we chip in and pay for it, so he just pay us back.
Sure.
He rolls up like in a brand new truck. And
oh,
is it like
gosh.
My new truck? I said, you gotta be fucking kidding me. He owes me like $300 and you're rolling up in a brand new truck. I was like, I've never been so appalled in my life. Just me.
I was very appalled last night listening to the Brian and Vinny show, particularly the granny segment, because every week or every other week
they
have these contests.
I haven't listened yet.
Spoiler alert.
Well, spoiler alert, goddamn it, because I'm talking about this. Every time they have a contest, the way you enter the contest is you put the answer on granny's wall, and that's how you enter the contest. Well, he decided last week he was going to have his own contest, and that was to name his dad's car that he used to have. which a lot of people went on Google because he gave a stupid clue that, you know, anyone could get on Google to find out. But I didn't need Google. As soon as he said it was Carlos's car, I knew it was a fucking El Camino.
Yeah.
So when this show was on, like, I listened to the Brian Finney shows and the Wrestling Observers. I listened to while doing my paper route, which basically means I am listening to these shows within minutes of when they hit the website. So
right.
I was listening to this show because I was checking my phone every few minutes doing my paper route to see if it pops up. I listened to the show. I heard the contest. I figured it out right away. I paused the show. I went to Facebook, put on Granny's Wall, El Camino. All right. Well, Brian didn't say how to enter the contest. So, you know, me and a whole lot of other people, because it was like about five more times more people posted on Granny's Wall. What the prize was, posted on Granny's Wall, but then Brian got some PMs and decided that's how he was going to choose the winner. And I was stoked because I wanted, not only was I happy to win, but I actually wanted to see this shoot DVD with a New Age Outlaw, because you know it's got to be awesome. And and I didn't win because Brian
had a good
prize. He didn't tell anyone how to enter the goddamn contest. And now I got Lanny on Facebook is telling me a fib, trying to tell me that I need to let it go, that I wasn't the first person to answer. Like, she really got a PM. I told her, unless she got a PM, you know, there's no way that I wasn't first. And she's all, well, I did. Well, Granny, I say you're fibbing. I say there's no PM. I want a time. I want the date. I want the person's name. And I want my damn DVD, goddammit, Brian. Well, sorry your cat's sick.
So,
at
the other part of
surprise this time. I don't want no shit from the UWF or any of that bullshit. I don't want Vinny signing the Warrior poster or whatever. all these prizes is just stuff I would never want.
I know most people would like an unsigned Warriors poster because it's actually worth more until they degraded it by signing.
38 years old, I don't put posters on walls anymore. I don't give a shit about posters.
So here's the funny part about my I'll end my story with this. Last night, Vinny called me at like 5:30 and said, hey, can you give me a hand? He left his car up at Les Schwab, blah, 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 blah. Can I get a ride up there? Yeah, no worries. So I drive out to pick him up, and Vinny's like, hey, man, thanks for doing me a favor. And I said, yeah, I don't mind doing favors for you. And he goes, okay, what's the problem? I told him the story, and I look over at Vince, and he's got both of his hands up to his face, and he's just holding his face, and he's kind of laughing, kind of crying, kind of disgusted. And he looks at me, and he goes, Craig, Brian's a dick. And I said, yeah, he is. And we had a good laugh about it, and this is only going to, you know, it's not going to go any farther than between me and Vince and you guys and the, you know, five or six people that listen to us regularly. So
I lost all respect for Vinny when I saw him in his wrestling outfit on the board the other day. You know, Brian and Vinny's spread.
The velour?
Yeah, he used to wear that stuff.
He looked like a pimped out Where's Waldo.
Right.
You know?
That's kind of like what he was going for.
Not looking tough when I'm looking at her at Vinny with his yellow sunglasses.
Yeah. Well, he was my replacement when
money,
I got hurt.
How much money did Vinny win in the lottery, by the way?
Oh, I can't remember. Oh, shoot. I can't remember how much it was.
Was scratch off? Or numbers?
No, it was a storyline. It was a storyline. I can't remember how much it was.
Shoulders to Reddy's, and then he won like the lottery, and then he became Vinny V with his velour gold suit.
Right.
Did they ever bring in his carjacking into any storylines or anything like that?
I'll never forget that he got it, because that was awesome.
I just remember that story. Brian just casually mentioned on like Iata one day is my friend's shoulder truck got carjacked and some guy pummeled him and stole his car.
Yeah.
And I remember, and I knew when they play that song where Brian was saying Tutti Frutti, I knew right where that came from the other day. You remember that?
Where was it from?
It was from, it was like Iata from like 2000, and they had done this, they were reviewing Raw, and there was a Mark Henry and Mae Young skit where they're in bed, and Mae has edible panties, and the flavor is Tutti Frutti. So that's what Brian was saying, Tutti Frutti, because it was Mark Henry's favorite flavor, and that's what her edible panties were. And thank God all this happened in the dark.
Wow.
Isn't it horrible that, like, 10 years ago, that's one thing I remember that stuck in my head.
Speaking of Vince Verhey, he's if you're friends with him on Facebook, somebody named Maura has hacked his computer because she left it on his, says, ha ha ha, hacked by Maura. Thank you for leaving your Facebook on my computer. So he was using somebody else's computer and forgot to log out, so now she has access to
remember my Facebook got hacked. That makes me want to shoot somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, luckily they just got my email.
I just had to start me a new one, and then I couldn't even remember all the friends I had because, shit, I didn't even know half the people that I'm friends with, you know?
Right.
Let's end the show. I got stuff to do.
Hey, I finally got the watermark off my iPod.
You bought an iPod?
Or my iPhone.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I hopefully will have one under the tree here in the next few weeks.
What, an iPhone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, yeah.
I don't have it these days.
Droids are better.
That's all I need these days. I got a shitload of games on here. If you get one, I'll send you some for Christmas.
Well, Craig, do you have any parting words before we go?
Any parting words before you go? Have a good weekend.
Okay. Contreras, do you have any parting words?
No.
I just got something.
Hold on. My turn. Ed, do you have any parting words?
Actually, I do, Craig. Thank you for asking.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to the show last week, we talked about Pete having a new Team Diggity member, and I will be going on a date with this girl on my birthday come Tuesday, so I am very stoked and happy about that.
Have you sent her your pic?
She knows what I look like, goddammit.
Okay.
She's still going out with you. Weird.
Yeah, and she's freaking hot. So, well, go ahead and
get rid of the bullet then. They look respectable.
Huh?
Good thing you got rid of the mullet and you look respectable.
Yeah, maybe that's how the reason she said yeah. She maybe waiting on that kind of like shipping out for a while, but
I'm waiting for them to post the Brian and Vinny show this morning, so I go get ready to listen to it, so I click and subscription expired.
The what?
Subscription
expired.
Oh. I hate when that happens, dude.
It happened to me
on fucking WrestleMania night in Arizona.
Guess how much I paid for it.
I was like, Katrina, what's your password?
As you.
Guess how much I've paid for his site over the years. Yeah, nothing.
Well, as much as me.
That's because you make fun of Brian for being cheap and rubbing it in and get free
phone. It could not log on one time. His sub expired, and he had me hold the phone up to the speaker so he listened to the fucking Brian and Vinny show.
You're listening to the show anyway.
Well, you're lucky I had a flip phone so I could just, like, lay it down over the speaker. But I had a, God. That's this is above and beyond the Call of Duty right there, I think.
I'll tell you. Let's start the weekend. Let's go.
All right, well, let's go. Do we have any guests for next week, by the way?
Do I what?
Do we have any guests set up coming up?
I've got a bead on Brian Clark, and I just got to get back with him.
Is he the one from Chronic that's still alive?
Yes, Adam Baum.
Oh, that's
cool. And I can get Feinstein on the show, but I'm afraid Ed's going to ask that question.
Well, I'm going to have to, dude.
And I'm not getting him on the show.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
I would not be holding up my journalistic integrity if I did not ask
that
question.
Fuck that.
Number one, you have no integrity, journalistic or otherwise.
That's why I have to ask the question.
Well, then I ain't going to get him on the show. He's my buddy.
You can't even spell.
I want to be a dick about it. I'd actually do it in a real cool way, but I have to ask him.
My thing is I never try to ask questions that I know nobody's going to want to answer, and they might end up with somebody hanging up on me.
Exactly. I did that, and I had a guy tell me that I had the biggest balls in an interview he ever had. When I asked Luke about wrestling for the Gay Federation.
Oh, God, big deal. That's just like the general question you could ask somebody.
Nobody, Brian and Dave didn't ask that question, that's for sure.
Hey, let's start our weekend and the show.
I guess.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the American shit. Let's go, hook him up! Tonight.